Hello and welcome to this week's edition of The Bag Room. I'm Ryan Ballingy. It's good to have you here with us. You get a hold of me on Twitter or Instagram at the handle Ryan Ballingy. Our guest this week is Sam Hahn. He is the CEO of Lab Golf, Lie Angle Balanced Golf, L-A-B for short. And he got involved with the company, as I found out in the course of this interview, as a super fan of the company and the putter that basically saved his golfing life and ultimately got involved, became CEO, and has transformed the company in several ways to become a very important putter company that is really innovating in the space. And I wanted to have a conversation with Sam, not only about the putters, but also getting involved with Lab, the formation of the putters, how they have expanded as a company, and so many different facets of the work that he does and his company does. And this was a 45-minute conversation, and it easily could have gone a couple of more hours. And hopefully we will have more of those conversations between Sam and myself. Really, really enjoyed it. I hope you do as well. Enjoy this interview with Sam Hahn.
You've always been located there? Are you an Oregonian for life? Or
I grew up in Chicago. Okay. I've been in Eugene for 22 years now. So quite a while. So yeah, I've been here longer than I was in Chicago. So I guess I'm officially an Oregonian.
When did you start Lab Golf?
So I didn't found it.
Start with Lab Golf, I guess.
I started with Lab late 2017 is kind of when Bill and I started flirting with the idea. And then I think we were official kind of early 2018.
Okay.
And then we were rebranded as Lab by middle of 2018.
Gotcha. Okay. So what was it previously?
It's called Directed Force. The company was called Directed Force. And then,
I knew of the Directed Force putter because of Adam Scott, I think. Putter,
yeah, he was using it in 2019. The Directed Force putter was called the Reno. The company was called Directed Force. And the model was the Reno 1.0, 2.0, and then 2.1. And that was when I came along. And the tech was there. I mean, it was very real. I stumbled into it and it changed my life. And then Bill and I became buddies through a really goofy set of circumstances. I bought the putter and it was absolutely blowing my mind. And I started to hear a bit of a rattle, and the rattle got louder, and then eventually the head fell off. And so I had to send it back. Bill called personally to apologize, and he and I just kind of hit it off, and we became friends. About, I guess it would have been 2 or 3 months after that, he was about to close the doors. They had, all they had was the patent and a model, and the rest of it was really struggling. The branding, the marketing, the manufacturing, customer service, website, all of it just needed a whole new everything. So, we got to work right away on it in 2019 or 2018 and came up with a nice name and a nice brand and cool logos and all the stuff, and went from there.
Where did your involvement come in, or where were you? What were you doing previously before you got involved?
Nothing much related to what I'm doing now. other than that, I've always been promoting something my entire life. So I actually spent most of my life in the bar and music and entertainment business. So when I was in my late teens and early 20s, I was a touring musician and had a couple different bands I used to go around the country with. And I handled all of our booking and tour management. And I sort of parlayed that into a talent agency and so I was a talent buyer here in Eugene for a couple of different venues, one of them in particular for almost 13 years, sort of a small bar venue. And then about 7 years into that, I opened up my own place here in Eugene. It was a lot of night work. So I had nothing but time during the day to become a full certified golf, crazy person, like a crazy person. And then, Yeah. And then, like I said, ended up with the putter through a guy named Bob Duncan, who he lives in Bend now, has a very cool teaching business called GPS. And he introduced it to me. He had found it in Australia, I think. And then, yeah. And like I said, I had my experience with the putter that was crazy. I mean, it was nuts. I think I was a one when I got the putter. And I was a +3.5 6 weeks later without doing anything other than making 8 foot putts instead of missing them.
You were obviously a very good player. You're very accomplished.
Yeah, I not so accomplished. I don't love competitive golf, but you know, around here and you know, in the Saturday morning games and all that stuff, I do pretty good. And yeah, I think the highest my handicap's been in the last 20 years has probably been 15 years anyway, has probably been 1.5 or so. And then the lowest I ever was at that 3.5 after I got my +3.5 after I got the directed force putter. And then when I got into business, all of a sudden all my daytime 36 hole days disappeared pretty instantly. So
did you get down so quickly to scratch over what, 2-3 years, or was it a longer slog?
Yeah, I played when I was little. My dad showed me how to, you know, hold the club and swing, and you know, we used to go out once or twice a month during the summer. And he actually joined a country club when I was in high school. So I got to play a little bit more, but I would just kind of go around and around. I was always crazy about the game. Like I always was super addicted to it. And, but I never actually studied the game, until I got out to Oregon. So when I got out to Oregon, I was probably an 18 handicap, something like that. and I'd had a hard time in the past, like finding, you know, like-minded folks to golf with. Like I'm not your standard golfing guy, you know, music business and you know, all that. So I met sort of this, like, you know, uber stony golfer who was like he was like the first good player that I ever got to you know, play with. And that's the only way to get better is to play with guys that are better than you and see how they do. I think about probably a year and a half later, I was a scratch player. 2 years later, I was a scratch player. I won a couple club championships at the Muni. And 18 years later, I actually just won one here at Emerald Valley. Our factory's on a golf course.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. It's awesome. Actually, there's a, you can't quite see it, but we actually got a little D3 tournament going on today.
Oh, look at that.
And it's a strong golf course. It's where the Ducks play.
Awesome.
And so we get access to them, which is awesome. Casey Martin's their coach, and he's been an incredible supporter of ours for pretty much since the beginning. All the kids are just so nice and always testing our stuff for us and giving us feedback. And then the course itself, for putting purposes in particular, is awesome. Very, very severe greens.
Yeah.
Very small, super slopey. You need to know how to roll it around here, and it's tight, and every hole's a dog leg of some kind, and big, you know, 150 foot tall fir trees guarding every fairway. And it's a good course. We were the company started, Bill founded the company in Reno. For the first couple of years, I was running the company remotely from here in Eugene. Bill ultimately decided he wanted to didn't want to be handling the day-to-day stuff anymore, so we moved the factory up here to Eugene in January of 21. Moved into like a 4,000 or 5,000 square foot place, and that was right when we got some positive reviews from Peter Finch and Rick Shields, and our business tripled overnight. And and we grew out of that space like within 3 months of being there. So for 2 years, we had to grind it out, and everybody was on top of each other. I mean, literally our sales guys were, there was four of them in one room on the phone, all of them at the same time. I mean, the builders were, you know, shoulder to shoulder, the packing room. I mean, it was really, really chaotic. And then started to look around for some new spaces. And the building that we're in now, when this course was built back in the 60s or 70s or something. It was supposed to be a whole big thing. So they built a giant building that had a health club in it, an office space upstairs and all that. And they've always struggled to kind of keep a tenant in here. And the health club, the fifth health for whatever, how the many iterations of attempts at making this a legit health club later, they moved out, and we asked the owner here if we could move in, and he was planning on tearing the building down. So we talked him out of that. And so, yeah, now we have 15,000 square feet with room to grow even more if we want, access to two beautiful putting greens and some really good players for some feedback. And all of us are golfers, you know, all, or not all of us, but most of the people that work for us, we've got almost 40 of us now. One of the things I always hated about the golf business, was that everybody I talked to in the golf business hated golf. They were over it, you know, like they were frustrated by it because they couldn't, you know, they couldn't play and they want to play, and you want to maintain your, you know, your low handicap, and you want to be able to compete every once in a while. And they're in the business. They don't have the time anymore. They still expect to play good. They don't. And then they just end up kind of bitter at the game. Matt, my chief operator, and I just always, you know, have made it a priority to support everybody's golf. Because if they're not passionate anymore, then we're not going to be.
What's the point? Yeah,
we can be. So we do. You know, we leave early a lot to go play. There's a Tuesday night league here that almost everybody in the building plays in, and
it's awesome. Sorry, I'm going to move myself here. Keep going.
And then come spring, we're going to have a lab specific little Thursday night game out here so that everybody can play. And it's great. It's a really, really great spot.
Sorry, I'm moving because my kids are going to come home from school in about 5 seconds, I think, and they're going to start making tons of noise.
How are your kids?
I want to make sure I'm not all noisy. All right, come down here. So have you been were you an equipment junkie, you know, from the outset? Yes.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Have always been obsessed with gear, putters in particular. And I was always been a pretty strong ball striker and hit the ball a long way and not particularly straight. So, you know, a lot of my game is scrambling and and I was notably streaky. And when I say that, like, everybody says, like, oh, I'm a streaky putter, and like, I really was actually streaky. Like, days I would putt and blow your mind, and then the next day I just wouldn't. And I got really obsessed with putters. I think by the time I got that Directed Force Reno, I think I had 50 different putters. And I was always bending them and tweaking them and re-gripping them and adding weight and taking weight away and, you know, just doing all these different things that, you know, now 6 years later in the torque world, like, I realized what I was chasing, like, and what the difference was day to day, and why I'd have my Rossi 2 out there and hold the world, and the next day I couldn't roll it into a swimming pool from 3 feet. And so the answer is torque. And, you know, when you have an instrument that is trying to twist out a square and trying to, you know, actively work to be anywhere except where you want it, it takes a lot of management. And the things from a physical standpoint that contribute to that management are pretty infinite: grip pressure, ball position, and tiny little margins on this stuff. And, you know, where you're gripping it on the putter, and all these different things are going to completely change your relationship with how that putter torques. Then you miss a couple putts, and then now it's going to change your relationship with how you're looking at the putter. And you know, if you're an equipment junkie, or any of the equipment junkies out there know, like, then you just start chasing. And I was in a perpetual state of chasing, to the point that I was intentionally, switching putters every single round, even if I had putted well the day before, just so that I could kind of always manufacture a honeymoon period with a new putter. And, you know, that got pretty tedious and certainly not reliable in competition. And I got the lab putter, and it's not like this all came I didn't figure all this out, you know, week one, but over the course of that first year of experiencing it, I really started to realize that torque was the culprit in almost every struggle that I had. And additionally, the culprit in every struggle that I saw everyone else having. From, you know, it is such a snowball effect of messiness when you're trying to manage the face, and it, you know, the impact that it's going to have on the way you stand over the ball, to your rate of transition, to your tempo, length of follow through, backstroke, all that kind of stuff. When, you know, with other, you know, what I call stroke sports, pool, bowling, darts, shooting a free throw, things like this, you never think about the instrument. Like, you're never thinking about managing the instrument. You're never thinking about, you know, managing your palm when you're throwing a dart. You're not thinking about where the angle of your palm is, you know, when you throw. You're just thinking about a target. Why isn't putting like that? Why don't we just focus on a target and roll it at it? On the days that we're putting good, which means the days that we have a really good relationship with how the putter is twisting, we get target oriented and we make a bunch of putts. On the days where we don't have a good relationship with the putter, all of a sudden our focus is down here rather than out there, and we putt shitty. And so the putter really, you know, over the course of a year, I mean, the my journey with that putter just made me realize we are totally doing it wrong. And what Bill invented is correct. It is just absolutely correct. And it's mind-numbing to consider that the game's been around as long as it have, and nobody thought to make the putter stay square. You know, like, it's not great. It's just such a, you know, when if you're like talking to a non-golfer, you know, and you explain like, yeah, you know, we make these putters that stay square by ourselves, and nobody else does. Which one are you going to use? They're like, I would think the one that stays square by itself is better. It's like, yeah, it's not tough.
I mean, we talk about squaring the club face, I mean, every club face in the bag, but you talk about squaring up the putter as opposed to what you're saying is, well, it is square. You just, you stroke it. It's doing the job.
Right.
Let the club do the work.
Exactly. It's a total no-brainer. And it's really fun these last couple of years where I'm not the only one telling that story anymore. You know, we've got a whole army of folks that are just over the moon with the technology, and the vast majority of them are having the same experience that I had. And those that don't have the same experience simply didn't give it enough time. Because if you do, people just don't go back. They just can't go back. Once you feel and really start utilizing lie angle balance and just letting gravity do its thing, you pick up your old Newport or whatever, and it'll feel like a rubber hose. I mean, it's just so difficult to putt with those things. I do every once in a while just to kind of remind myself and reestablish my appreciation for torque free putting. And you know, like, what's interesting is that all of the education that I've received and all the research that I've done and experimentation that I've done with lab actually makes me use conventional putters much better than I used to. The revealer device, you know, when you actually get to see firsthand how completely false the narrative about, you know, toe hang and face balance and all this stuff is, and you put them in a revealer and see what they actually do. Which then tells you, at least intellectually, what you need to do to compensate for what the putter is trying to do. I'm able to putt, you know, reasonably well with a torquing putter. and sometimes it's really fun because I'm still nostalgic, you know, like I used to have all these 8802s and, you know, cool blade putter stuff. And I love them, and I love the way they feel, and I love the way they sound. And so I'll, you know, I'll break one out every once in a while. I'll roll, you know, roll a couple of nice putts with it, those first three holes. And then it's always some version of the same putt, somewhere from 6 to 10 feet, sort of an off speed putt where you either need to float it or, you know, or hammer it or do something a little bit different than just make, you know, your regular old stroke. The relationship with the putter changes. I can feel it twist in my hand, and fuck this. It just sucks. So they really do what they say they do.
How has it felt to be, a proselytizer basically for this product, and then obviously be part of the company, and then to have that validated over time by other people, whether that's an influencer level or just an average person, average golfer?
Oh, it's everything to me. I mean, that's the thing that keeps it going for me. I don't have any, if we own like an iron company or something like that, where there hasn't really been any particularly significant technological advances in a very long time, but I was trying to say, well, we have this 5-step forging process, or ours look really cool, or whatever. There's no chance that I could still be passionate about this 6 years later. But the adrenaline that I get when I see somebody, you said proselytizing, see the light and find it is just such a rush, and it never gets old. It's been a while now, and it never, ever, ever gets old. It turns me on just as much every single time I see somebody's eyes light up and their brain starts spinning on like, why is this only now happening? And it's also challenging because, to continue with the proselytizing analogy, like, a lot of people don't want to have their minds changed. A lot of people don't want to think about things differently. And, I've gone out there with some pretty bold claims. I mean, my assertion that the narrative around, stroke types and, what kind of putter you should be fit into based on that stroke type, I'm out there saying that it is patently false, like not even close to true. Like I've seen people, tell me emphatically, that if you have relative to what, I don't know, more gait and more arc, that you should have a toe hang putter. And if you're relative to what, I don't know, more square to square, then you should use a face balance putter. I've heard people tell me emphatically that that's what is. I have yet to see the study that proves it to me. And it's not as though there aren't plenty of people that could. It's just like, and it was actually Ping that came up with the narrative. And I'm not arguing that people react differently to different torque profiles. Sure. I'm just arguing that the commonalities between this stroke and this putter type are not what the industry would have you believe. And so I'm out there saying that, and we've got some serious gurus who make a living off of that narrative. So I get consequently a lot of adversity. I make people angry, not so much the regular old Joe Blows, they're a little bit more open to it. But, one of the most important experiences I had, which sort of solidified, my passion and belief in what I'm doing, and what the company is doing. And, we had just started to kind of get out on tour and follow those guys around. There was a top putting coach out there who had been very polite to us and, somewhat complimentary on, the technology. We had just recently come out with the B2 was our blade model. And he went out of his way to come across the green and tell me how much he liked the putter. And so I'm thinking, me and this guy, we're tight. He's, we're doing it. This guy gets it. That same day, a top player who was one of his students came over and was interested in the blade. So I emailed the coach after my interaction with the player. And I said, hey, so-and-so's been, checking out our putter. If you don't mind, put in a good word for me. And he writes me back and he says, while I appreciate that your technology is another option, out there in the world of, ways that putters balance, I've tested this player a million times over and he positively needs a full toe hang putter in order to perform his best. And further, Sam, I have to say, I do find, your revealer demonstration to be a little misleading, because it's not as though a putter face or a putter head has so much torque that we can't mitigate it simply by putting our hands on the putter. And I was quite literally devastated. Like I just, it absolutely crushed my soul because I had so much respect for this guy. And I just started questioning myself. And I'm like, am I just out here like believing my own bullshit? Like, did I just fall for some kind of like snake oil and like whatever? And I'm just like, it was just spinning and spinning and spinning and so upset by this. And then I literally woke up in the middle of the night, like straight up, shot up out of bed and realized like, wait a second. If you're saying that torque is so easily mitigated simply by putting your hands on the putter, then why does this player positively need a full toe hang putter? You've been fitting for torque the whole time. You tell all of your players you need this putter, or you need this kind of putter. The only difference between them is the way that they twist. So you can't tell me in the same breath that torque doesn't matter while also saying that this one player positively needs this one kind of putter. And that's when I realized, like, I'm alone. I am alone in this journey. I'm not going to get help from the gurus of the world. They, in fact, don't want to have to change their narrative. They don't want to have to rethink the way that hands go on a putter, or the way that putters move in transition. And so it both reinvigorated my passion for what it is that I do, but also made it very clear that I've got a long road. And you know, there's nothing in the world more difficult to do than to change somebody's mind. It is so, so, so hard. And now, you know, in this day and age, we know that better than ever, as we, you know, are all at war with each other online in our own echo chambers, trying to talk to somebody on the other side, thinking that we can change their mind, and we never do. And it's no different in golf. People have their ideas about how stuff is supposed to work, and it's really, really difficult to change it. Now 6 years later, now there are some coaches that get it, and there are certainly some players that get it on the tour and so on. And, but you know, that experience also had me realizing I probably ought not to be focusing too much on the tour, the high level instructors and such, and to focus on those that I can reach, that aren't going to, you know, be so bound by convention and sort of dug in on their ideals about putting, because the vast majority, 99% of those people in the world who play golf don't have ideals about putting. They're a lot better, you know. So and they're, you know, don't have as much ego about it and such. And so we did a really good job of kind of shifting our focus, which it's a mistake I've seen a lot of companies make, where they just kind of put all of their eggs in the tour basket, waiting for the tour to validate it. And if they don't, then your company's screwed. So we kind of said, screw the tour for a little while. I mean, at least we were certainly happy to serve any tour players if we needed. But we realized that the model couldn't include us just going full tilt into tour world. And so, and then something really interesting happened for us, was that tour players play in a pro-am every single Wednesday. And they go home to their country clubs and they play with Joe Blows, you know, just like you and me. They don't all live in this tour pro bubble. They play golf courses just like me and you, and they travel just like me and you, and they meet people. And our general population customers started getting tour players interested in our stuff. You know, our first big hit on tour was Adam Scott used a conventional length putter back in 2019, the original Directed Force. Well, he found it not through me and not through a rep out on tour, but through Kelly Slater, the surfer. Kelly was playing a putter had been since before I did, actually. Kelly had the putter before I did. Him and Adam are, you know, surf buddies and whatever, and they played AT&T Pro-Am, and it was Kelly that got Adam to give me a call and try out the putter, and the results spoke for themselves for Adam. I actually have a video of the very, very first putt he hit. It was a Riviera, and we just built him a putter, and it was on 9, and it was this massive freaking breaker. I mean, like a full 90-degree bend in this putt, and he rolled it right over the edge from like 30 feet, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be good. It's going to be really cool. He used it for, I think, about 3 months starting then. Was leading the Masters with it in 2019, near the Tiger one. And then just a set of circumstances I really wish I could have prevented. He was at the time traveling with a broomstick and arm lock and our conventional putter, and he, you know, was just always kind of farting around. He had it in his head that he did better with the arm lock when greens were slow. So through two rounds, he's leading at the Masters, putting really well. Saturday morning, he gets up to start hitting balls. Somebody tells him it's going to rain. So that the greens would, you know, ultimately slow down. So he went in, has the caddy go in and grab the arm lock, spends about 45 minutes on the putting green trying to dial in the arm lock. And then right before he teed off, had John go back and get the directed force, but his ball position never changed from when he was screwing around with the arm lock, which was way, way further back. And I'm just like sitting at home watching this tournament, and they got the worm cam on him, and I'm like, oh bro, like, oh my God. Like, before he pulled the putter back, I'm like, this is coming up short and right, and that's going to come up short and right. He was such a gentleman too. We talked about it after, and he, you know, he figured that out too, because he putted pretty well on Sunday actually.
Yeah.
Already out of it. But yeah, he's been an absolute delight to work with. And then took about a year off of it. You know, we stayed in touch. He's honestly kinder with his time and his willingness to actually give legitimate feedback than any tour player I've met. And he's a total equipment junkie. He's also different because whenever I'm talking to these guys kind of outside tournaments or even in tournaments, the last thing in the world they want to talk about is golf. Like they just talk to me about anything other than golf and putting. And Adam's not that way. He's like me. He's like you. He's, you know, loves the game. Just absolutely game. And it's so wonderful to see and to work with somebody who loves it like that and who's going to really thoroughly test. He's very smart. And yeah, he gets it. And so, yeah, he started testing the Mez. Would have been a year ago in November, October. We made him a couple brooms and didn't really hear from him. And then right before he was about to start his season in the Middle East, you know, called me up. And the one we sent him was like a raw prototype. Like it was truly a prototype. It was just meant for feedback. And it looked like hell. Like it had no finish on it. There was no graphics, no nothing. And then he put it in play. And that was what he used. And then we, you know, refined the broomstick version of it for him. And he's been in it ever since.
Has there ever been an apprehension, I guess, in terms of how you deliver the concept of what's behind every putter that you make? I mean, is there a sense of we have the way to do this? You don't need to make four different versions of a putter to accomplish what we can accomplish with our understanding, with our technology? Or is it always, hey, if I can reach net more people, if I give them something that seems familiar or feels more familiar, that'll get them to understand or to come over or to convert? I guess, 100%. Are you? Yeah.
Yeah. I think I understand what you're asking. Like, yeah. I mean, so when I first got the company, we were out seeking investment, and every single investor I had asked the exact same question, which is, can you make it smaller? Because this is when we only had the directed force putter, and they all asked, can we make it smaller? Can we make something cooler looking? Can we make something a little easier around the eyes? And at the time I said, we probably can, but I'm not going to, because you want people talking about the world's ugliest putter. You want people out there, you know, noticing it. And this was right around when all that stuff happened with Adam at the Masters, and you could see that thing from four fairways over.
Right.
And so people were noticing versus if it was,
I noticed, know,
like, everybody did. And like, versus if it was like the putter that we just released, the Link.
Right.
Nobody ever would have noticed that. Nobody ever would have noticed that he had technology and a putter. And so early on those first few years, I think it served us very well that we had such an unusual looking putter, which attracted putter nerds, and, you know, people that were a bit more certainly open-minded and, you know, interested in forward-thinking technology. And then the time was right when we felt like we really had saturated that market, where enough people had seen the revealer demonstration and enough people had seen their friends with the directed force, but just couldn't look at it, that it was time to start figuring out what the next model was going to be. We did those blades, blade one and blade and B2. They went very poorly. I don't think at any point they accounted for more than 10% of our sales in a given month. They're fun. I have a B2. I still break out every once in a while. It's got the tiniest little sweet spot, and the tech is there, but you couldn't feel it nearly as well as you could. So we really wanted to come up. You know, the world was waiting. Everybody wanted to try the tech in a nicer, you know, smaller chassis. We farted around with a couple designs in house, and then I actually met a guy at the PGA show named John Berquist. And John was the CEO of Rife for a while after Guerin left. And then he started his own putter company called Flux. He was displaying his putters at the PGA show that year, and they were really weird looking. And I loved them. I thought they were so cool. Just really rethought everything, where the shaft goes in, face technology, just different camber, different lines. I mean, just a very geometric look. So he and I connected, and we ultimately contracted him to design at least the aesthetic aspect of the Mez. That putter put us on the map. You know, I mean, there was enough people that, like I'd said, that had heard about it and seen the demonstrations. And so, finally there was, you know, a package that people could deal with, even though it was still a little weird. We got a bunch of memes of people making the Tesla truck, you know, compared to our putter. And I think my favorite comment we ever got on the Mez, I have like a whole list of them for directed force. We've, you know, that putter's been called everything under the sun. The Mez didn't have quite as many nicknames, but my personal favorite was somebody saw online. We posted a picture of a blue Mez that we had made, and somebody was like, "That looks like a Smurf just shit out a Lego." And I didn't stop laughing for 2 days. I thought that was so funny, because that's pretty much exactly what it looks like. And it was what I love about it is that it was normal enough that it, you know, kind of fit in this box of this Odyssey number 7 shape, the fang shape that's, you know, become so popular in the last 15 years, but also weird enough that you knew it was a lab when you saw it, you
right,
know, the,
right.
Onset head and crooked grip and all that stuff was still there, and the tech was still there. And now all of a sudden the pros could look at it, because the pros aren't any different than you or me. Like, they don't want to, they take crap from their friends when they're out in practice rounds. Like, with the, you know, we had a few bites here and there with the pros. And it would go, when it went well, it would, like, we, like Vaughn Taylor putted with it for 4 or 5 months. Granted, he wasn't particularly, he actually kept his card because of that putter. He was about to lose his card at the end of 2018. And we met him in Reno. And he ended up finishing top three. He put the putter in play that week, and put the lights out. I mean, he made everything. And so he was in the putter for a while with the directed force. Jimmy Walker messed around with the directed force for a minute. But man, if you're, you know, a touring professional, you miss a couple 4-footers and you're looking down at a branding iron, it's really, really difficult not to think, maybe I shouldn't be using, you know, a satellite dish to putt with. And you know, versus when you miss a 4-footer with your answer, well, you're used to it. You've missed a million 4-footers with your answer. So it's at least familiar.
Yeah.
If you're going to miss, you'd rather know why you're missing or see, you know, have it feel familiar. So they got ditched, and the Mez definitely just made it a little easier to keep it in the bag for longer. It's been amazing for us. Adam was, his success with it obviously helped a bunch. And then, yeah, we've had, you know, more tour plays than a lot of our competitors, really. I mean, there's, you know, you got your big five, and then underneath that, we're kind of usually right at the top of the Darrell survey for the sort of more independent companies. And then now Link, Link has been, you know, there was finally enough of an audience, finally enough awareness of our technology that, people were noticing what it was and that it was lab, and noticing the subtleties about where the shaft was located and things like that, that we could have this, you know, straight up answer style putter. I mean, this is a very, very traditional putter. And
yeah.
And now all of the purists and all of the, I would never use something like that guys, you know, who were at least intellectually interested in the technology, because it's hard not to be at least intrigued by a self squaring putter. And yeah, they've been fantastic out on tour. We've had a bunch of action, and even had a win out on the live tour with the Charles Howell on the first event this year in Mayakoba with, I think he had 22 putts that last day.
I mean, lights out.
He hold everything, and this is a dude who
not a great putter.
he actually is a good putter. I mean, he was
relatively speaking, right? Of course, I mean, you're incredible.
But I mean, like, there's guys like, well, I won't name names in case they're listening. I don't want to hurt anybody's confidence. But there's guys out there that, you know, who don't have good strokes. You know,
it's simply, it's physical and mental, not just mental.
For sure, and the guys that were my candidates, were guys with good strokes that didn't make putts. Charles Hall was right at the top of that list. There was a literal list. When I got the company, I'm like, here's 15 guys I gotta find a way into it. I was being realistic, because I was like, I want DJ, I want Tiger, I want Rory. You know, like, you know, guys, I watched a ton of golf. I know every player out on tour, and so I made a list, and the number one on that list was Sergio Garcia, and seeing him using the putter right now is super exciting. And his stroke seems to be just improving all on its own, just by, you know, his body starting to accept that he doesn't need to manipulate the face anymore. Like, the transition's smoother, and back to through is, you know, more proportionate. And but yeah, Charles Howell was also on that list, and it's thrilling to see the two of them really into it.
I think we've talked for like 40 minutes. I really only intended to go for like 20. I could talk to you for another 2 hours, I feel like.
These things are usually an hour. I was planning for an hour in my head.
Oh, no. I usually do like 20-minute interviews for these things. This was awesome. Can we do this again another time? Like, I mean, like, do multi-parts of this?
Absolutely.
Would you mind?
No, at all.
I could turn this into two episodes unto itself, and we could do a whole series in these. Because I would love to talk about Link and the notion of, I gotta think of a clever way to describe this when I actually ask you this about it, but the idea that people who putt with an answer style putter are maybe the most or the least likely to embrace change because they've embraced something that's 60 years old, instead of people who do play mallets or are prone to or willing to play putters that have a different shape because they accept that it doesn't have to be that way.
You would think, man, I swear to God, especially when I first got the company, we would go do demo days and stuff like that. People would walk up, you know, and be like, you know, I'm sorry, bro, but I will never put something that looks like that in my bag. And 9 times out of 10, the dude that goes out of his way to say that, he's got a spider in his hand.
Yep.
Like, look at it. It's your putter.
Here's what you got, dude. Like,
you want me to write TaylorMade on the bottom? Will that help?
Right.
But yes, no, you're exactly right. The answer folks, like, they didn't even give us a second look, and now they are.
I mean, and I'm an answer player. I mean, I have a 3D printed custom design answer putter that I have designed myself, so that's why I use it. But
you get it from Northwest Custom?
No, Kronos Golf, Phil Papoose.
Yeah, sure.
Because he had this project going where he wanted to
Still,
do custom.
is he still doing it?
I think so. I got a Linksoul magazine the other day with a feature about him. So I think he is still. I don't know if he's doing the 3D custom stuff, but he had this idea of doing 3D custom printers or 3D printed custom putters. And I designed one with him with some combinations of different things that I've really liked about putters over the years and back flange alignment, all kinds of cool different things. But I mean, I've always used that kind of putter, but have never really found success with it until I wound up messing with a happy putter. And I've used mallets, I've used 8802s, I've used everything in between, and I eventually kind of figured it out. But to this putter that I have now is yeah, it's an answer, but it's not, for some very specific reasons. So I've always kind of been intrigued. I mean, when I saw the link, I was like, okay, this is what I'm used to, but there's something to it that's not what I'm used to. So that was what really intrigued me about it. But again, I've always used kind of the this is what we have putter instead of this is what it could be putter.
Everybody has.
But
Nobody
I
knew
feel
what.
like I've kind of evolved as part of that project to okay, I'm willing to try. And if it net makes me better, then that's the answer. That's it. It doesn't matter.
And what you just said, I think, has been the hardest thing for people to embrace is that for the most part, people's experience with trying different putters, it doesn't typically make them better. It's just different. They
Right.
just
It's
want to try
temporary. It's a
something different or
temporary
feel something
brain
different.
jumble.
But it's so difficult for people because like with drivers, when you're buying a driver, even though it's total crap now, for a long time there between 97 and 2012, when they said 10 more yards, they weren't lying. You know,
Right.
that you could go buy 10 more yards, but you can't really
Yeah.
quantify putting that way. And
Right.
so when we come out, when somebody comes out with a putter face, like micro hinge technology or descending loft or whatever, whatever the shtick that they're pushing is, they can tell you what it's supposed to do, but they can't give you data that says that that
That
you're
it
actually going
doesn't.
to make more putts. And so that's why I think people, when they see anybody with a putter trying to advertise it as actually better, people are instantly skeptical because they've been sold on putters that weren't actually better. They were just different. And I think that's how most of us approached buying putters and testing putters and all that is like, oh, let me find one I like. I like looking at, I like the sound of, I like the feel of, all that kind of stuff. And performance wasn't really a part of the equation.
Thank you again to Sam for being on the show. It really was great to talk to him, and we definitely will do it again. If you enjoyed the show, please give us a 5-star review on a podcast service if you can do that. That'll help us reach more people. Tell a friend about the show. You can listen to all of Golf News Net's podcasts on your favorite podcast service of choice, but you can also find all of our shows for Golf News Net Radio, including the ones hosted by all of our contributors from around the world at golfnewsnet.com. Just click on the radio button and you can see everything going on the station on a daily basis or listen on demand. Thank you so much for checking us out today. I appreciate it. I've been Ryan Ballingy, and we will talk to you next time inside the bag room.